Drake moved with surprising speed. He pivoted and yanked Lana up by her hair.
"Take my arm,"
he hissed. She placed her trembling hand against the melted flesh, feeling the fresh-cut bone beneath it, wanting to throw up. The glow deepened. Lana felt her entire body filled with it, not hot, but cold as ice. Drake's flesh was growing. She could feel it moving beneath her fingers. But it wasn't human flesh. Not human flesh at all.
"No,"
she whispered.
"Yes,"
Drake breathed.
"Yes."
39. 36 hours, 37 minutes. And sometimes when you lie to me, sometimes I'll lie to you. And there isn't a thing you could possibly do. All these half-destroyed lives aren't as bad as they seem. But now I see blood and I hear people scream. Then I wake up, and it's just another bad dream. Sam sang along to the Agent Orange tune on his iPod, feeling as if the familiar lyrics had crossed the line from being just another self-consciously disturbing song to being too close to describing his life. He was in the fire station, not exactly enjoying a lonely lunch. Quinn was, well, he never seemed to know where Quinn was anymore. His friend, was that word even appropriate? His friend Quinn was a shadow who came and went, sometimes joking like his old self, sometimes sitting sullen and watching DVDs he'd seen a million times before. In any case, he wasn't there for lunch at the fire station, despite the fact that Sam had made enough soup for extra mouths. Edelio materialized silently in the doorway. He looked discouraged. Sam realized he'd been singing aloud and, embarrassed, dialed down the music and pulled out the earbuds.
"What did you find, Edelio?"
"If she's anywhere in Perdido Beach, she's doing a good job of hiding, Sam,"
Edelio said.
"We've looked. We've talked to everyone. Lana's gone. Her dog is gone. She was in Elwood's house, then she was gone."
Sam tossed his music player onto the table.
"I have soup. Want some?"
Edelio sagged into a chair.
"What's this song?"
"What?"
"Oh, it's called A Cry for Help in a World Gone Mad."
They shared a mordant laugh.
"Next I'll dial up that old song. What's it called?"
Sam searched his memory.
"Yeah, R.E.M. It's the end of the world as we know it."
"It is that," Edelio commented. "I've been searching for a girl who can heal people with magic and taking some time to learn how to shoot a machine gun."
"How'd that go, by the way?"
"I got four boys can more or less handle it, counting Quinn. But man, we aren't exactly the Marines, you know? Kid named Tom starts shooting and he almost shoots me. I had to dive into a pile of dog poop."
Sam tried not to laugh, but neither of them could stop once it started.
"Yeah, you think it's funny. Wait till it's you,"
Edelio said. Sam was serious again.
"I don't know what's holding Kane back. It's been 2 days. What's keeping him?"
"What's the hurry? The more time we have, the more we're prepared."
"Dude, tomorrow night I'm out of here," Sam said.
"You don't know that for sure, man,"
Edelio said, embarrassed.
"I just wish I knew what was going on up at Coates."
Edelio caught on immediately.
"You talking about spying them out?"
Sam pushed his soup away.
"I don't know what I'm talking about, man. I'm halfway thinking we should take it to them, you know? Go up there and do this.
We have guns. We have guys who can drive.
We got, in addition to you, 4 other mutants with powers that might be useful. You know, powers you can fight with. Not like this one girl where she can disappear, but only if she's really embarrassed. Sam smiled despite himself. You're kidding. No, man. She's really bashful and all, so you say something like, you have nice hair, and suddenly she's invisible. But she's still there. You touch her, but you can't see her. That's not exactly going to stop Kane. Taylor is working on her teleporting. She can go a couple of blocks now. Adelio shrugged. But in terms of useful, we got that kid. He's 9. He can do like you do with the light, but not as much.
9. We can't make a 9-year-old hurt someone, Sam protested.
How about an 11-year-old who can move so fast you can barely see her?
That girl Brianna?
She calls herself the Breeze now. Like, as fast as the Breeze?
The Breeze? Like a superhero name? He shook his head ruefully. Great. That's all we need, Sam said. It was one of his mother's favorite phrases. That's all we need. He felt a sharp pang in his chest, but it passed quickly. What do we have the Breeze do when she's zipping around? Adelio looked uncomfortable.
I guess we give her a gun. She shoots and zooms away and shoots again.
Oh, God. Sam hung his head. 11 years old and we're giving her a gun? To shoot at people? At human beings? It's sick. Adelio didn't have anything to say to that. Sorry, man. I'm not laying this off on you, Adelio. It's just... I mean, this is nuts. It's wrong. Bad enough kids our age, but 4th graders and 5th graders?
There came the clattering of feet on the stairs, and both Sam and Adelio leapt to their feet, expecting the worst. Dekka, one of the Coates refugees, came barreling into the room and skidded on the waxed floor. Her forehead had been injured, a 2-inch gash, and she had refused to let Lana heal it.
I got that from Drake's shoe when he kicked me, she had said. Heal up my hands from the plastering, but leave my head. I want something to remember it by.
Sam reflected that that was only the 2nd most interesting thing about Dekka. 1 would probably be the fact that she seemed to have the power to suspend the force of gravity within a small area.
What is it, Dekka? Sam asked.
That guy Ork. He just walked into town all raggedy looking.
Ork? Just Ork? No Howard?
Dekka shrugged.
I didn't see anyone else. He just walked on in, and that guy Quinn told me I better go tell you. He said he was going to follow Ork home.
That would be the house Ork had shared with Howard. It wasn't a long walk.
Maybe I should bring a gun, Adelio said darkly.
I think I can handle Ork now, Sam said. His own confidence surprised him.
He'd never before in his life thought he could handle Ork. Quinn was waiting outside the house. Sam thanked Quinn almost formally.
I appreciate you sending Dekka to me and keeping an eye on things.
I do what I can,
Quinn said, more bitterly than he had probably intended. Sam and Adelio stood by as Quinn knocked on the door. The bully's all-too-familiar voice yelled,
"Come in, morons!"
Ork was popping the top of a can of beer.
Let me drink this,
Ork muttered.
Then you can kill me or whatever.
Ork had lived a bad couple of days. He was scratched, bruised, battered. 1 eye was swollen and black. His pants were torn and filthy. His shirt was barely recognizable as a shirt. It had been ripped to tatters, then knotted crudely back together. He was still big, but he looked less threatening than they'd ever seen him before.
"Where's Howard?" Sam demanded.
"With them,"
Ork said.
"With who?"
Drake, that girl, what's her name, Lana, and a talking dog.
Ork smirked.
Yeah, I'm crazy. Talking dog. Was the dogs that took me down. Ripped a hole out of my guts. Ate my thigh.
What are you talking about, Ork? He drank deep. He sighed.
Man, that's good.
Talk sense, Ork, Sam snapped. Ork belched loudly. He stood up slowly. He set down his beer. With stiff arms, he pulled his ragged shirt up and over his head. Adelio gasped. Quinn turned away. Sam just stared. Great patches of Ork's chest and belly were covered by gravel. The individual rocks were the color of muddy water, green-gray. As Ork breathed, the gravel rose and fell.
It's spreading,
Ork said. He seemed bemused by it. He touched it with his finger.
It's warm.
Ork, how did this happen? Sam asked.
I told you. The dogs ate out my leg and my guts and some other parts I ain't telling you about. Then this stuff kind of filled it in.
He shrugged, and Sam heard a faint sound like footsteps on a wet gravel driveway.
It doesn't hurt,
Ork said.
It did, but it doesn't hurt now. Itches, though.
Mother of God, Adelio said softly.
Anyway,
Ork said,
I know y'all hate me, so either kill me or get out. I'm thirsty and hungry.
They left him. Outside, Quinn walked quickly down the street, stopped suddenly, and threw up into a bush. Sam and Adelio caught up with him. Sam put his hand on Quinn's shoulder.
Sorry,
Quinn said.
I guess I'm just weak.
Worse is coming, Sam said darkly. But all of a sudden a nice easy blink doesn't seem like the worst thing that could happen, does it?
Drake's been gone for 2 days, Diana said. We need to look at what we have here.
I'm busy, Kane snapped.
They were standing on the front lawn of Coates. Kane was supervising an effort to repair the hole caused by the earlier power struggle. He teleported bricks, a few at a time, up to where Mallet and Chaz were attempting to cement them in place. It had all collapsed twice already. It was one thing to pour concrete into a mold in the ground. It was a lot harder to mortar bricks into place.
We need to make some kind of deal with the townies, Diana said. Townies. Carefully avoiding having to say Sam, or your brother. Okay, you caught me, Diana said. We have to make some kind of deal with your brother, Sam. They still have food. We are running out.
Kane made a show of being distracted as he levitated another stack of bricks out through the front door of the school and up to the second floor, where Mallet and Chaz dodged the arriving load.
I'm getting better at this, Kane said. I'm gaining control. Precision. Goody for you.
Kane's shoulders sagged.
You know, you could occasionally show some support. You know how I feel about you. But all you ever do is bust me. What do you want to do? Get married?
Kane reddened, and Diana erupted in an unusually loud laugh.
You get that we're 14, right? I mean, I know you think you're the Napoleon of the phase, but we're still kids.
Age is relative. I'm one of the two oldest people in the phase. And the most powerful.
Diana bit her tongue.
She had a smart-ass answer ready, but she had tweaked Kane enough for one day. She had bigger issues to deal with than Kane's puppy love. And that's all it was. Kane wasn't capable of real love, the deep kind, the kind that would grow over time.
"Of course, neither am I,"
Diana muttered.
"What?" "Nothing."
She watched Kane as he worked. Not what he was doing, but the boy himself. He was the most charismatic person she'd ever known. He could have been a rock star. And clearly he thought he was in love with her. It was the reason he tolerated her impertinence. She supposed she liked him. They had been attracted to each other almost from the start. They had been friends. No, that wasn't quite the word. Accomplices. Yes, that would do. Accomplices. They had been accomplices since Kane first discovered his powers. She had been the first person he showed. He had knocked a book off the table from across the room. She'd been the one who encouraged him to work at it, develop it, practice it in secret. Each time he reached some new level, he would show it off for her. And when she showed even the slightest kindness toward him, a word of praise, an admiring nod even, he would puff up and seem to shine with some reflected light. It took so little to manipulate him. It didn't require real affection, just the hint of it. Diana would task Kane to use his power to trip some snob she didn't like, or humiliate some teacher who had come down on her. And when she reported to Kane that the science teacher had cornered her in an empty lab and tried to feel her up, Kane sent him sprawling down a set of steps and into the hospital. Diana enjoyed that time. She had a protector who would do her bidding and ask nothing in return. Kane, despite his oversized ego, his looks, his charm, was terribly awkward with girls. He had never even tried to kiss her. But then he had attracted the attention of Drake Merwin, who had already acquired a reputation as the most dangerous bully in a school with plenty of bullies to go around. And from that point on, Kane had played them off against each other, doing a little for Diana when she asked, and a little with Drake. As Kane's powers grew, both relationships changed. And then the school nurse, Sam's mother, Kane's mother too, though none of them knew that then, started to figure out that something was very, very strange about her long-lost little boy. The bricks collapsed suddenly, a series of thuds as they hit the lawn, and a series of groans and curses from Chaz and Mallet. Kane seemed almost not to notice.
"What do you think it was, Diana?"
he said, almost as if he'd read her thoughts.
"I think they didn't set them straight enough,"
she replied, knowing that wasn't what he meant.
"Not that. Her. Nurse Temple."
He repeated the name, drawing it out to get the feel of it.
"Nurse Connie Temple."
Diana sighed. This was not a conversation she wanted to have.
"I didn't really know the woman. She has two sons. One she keeps. The other she gives up for adoption. I was a baby." "I'm not a shrink," Diana said. "I always had the feeling, you know, that my family wasn't my real family. They never said I was adopted, but my mother... well, the woman I thought was my mother. I don't know what to call her now. Anyway, her. She never talked about having me. You know, you hear moms talking about going into labor and all? She never talked about that. Too bad Dr. Phil's not around. You could tell him all about it.
I think she must have been pretty cold. Nurse Temple. My so-called mother. He was looking at Diana now, head cocked, frowning, skeptical.
Kinda like you, Diana.
Diana made a rude sound.
Don't try to get deep, Kane. She was probably just a screwed-up teenager at the time. Maybe she figured she could handle one kid, but not two. Or maybe she tried to adopt both of you out, but no one would take Sam.
Kane was taken aback.
Are you sucking up to me with that? I'm trying to get you to move on. Who cares about your mommy issues? We have enough food for 2, maybe 3 weeks. Then we're down to beans. See what I mean? I'll bet she was just like you, Diana. Cold and selfish.
Diana was about to answer when she heard a rushing sound behind her. She spun and saw a wave, a swarm of rough, shaggy yellow beasts. The coyotes seemed to come from everywhere at once, a disciplined, purposeful invasion that would quickly overwhelm her and Kane. Kane raised his hands, palms out, armed and ready.
"No!" a voice yelled. "Don't hurt 'em! They're friends!"
It was Howard, marching up toward them, waving his hands. Behind him came the healer girl, Lana, looking shell-shocked. And behind them, Drake. Diana cursed. He was still alive. And then she saw Drake's arm. The burned stump, the remains of the arm she had sawed off while Drake screamed and cried and threatened, had been altered. It was stretched, like it had been turned into dark, blood-red taffy. It wrapped twice around his body. No. Impossible. Howard came rushing up first.
"Has Orc shown up here?"
But neither Kane nor Diana answered. Both were staring at Drake, who sauntered toward them, all his cockiness restored, no longer the ragged scarecrow who had wept when he saw the melted stump of his hand lying on the tile floor.
"Drake," Kane said. "We thought you were dead."
"I'm back," Drake said, "and better than ever."
The red tentacle unwrapped itself from around his waist, like a python releasing its victim.
"Like it, Diana?" Drake asked.
The arm, that impossible blood-red snake, coiled above Drake's head, swirled, writhed. And then, so fast that the human eye could barely register the movement, it snapped like a bullwhip. The sound was a loud crack, a mini-sonic boom. Diana cried out in pain. Stunned, she stared at the cut in her blouse and the trickle of red from her shoulder.
"Sorry," Drake said, with no attempt at sincerity. "I'm still working on my aim."
"Drake," Kane said, and despite the blood, despite Diana's wound, he grinned.
"Welcome back."
"I brought some help," Drake said.
He extended his left hand, and Kane shook it awkwardly with his right.
"So, when do we go take down Sam Temple?"
40. 26 hours, 47 minutes.
"They'll come tomorrow evening," Sam said. "I believe Kane needs to defeat me. I think it's an ego thing with him." They held the final council of war in the church, the same church where Kane had carried out his smooth takeover.
The cross had been propped back up against the wall. It wasn't where it was supposed to be, but at least it wasn't on the floor anymore. From the Perdido Beach kids, there were Sam, Astrid, Little Pete, Adelio, Dara, Elwood, and Mother Mary. Albert had been invited, but he was focusing on his plan for Thanksgiving and on experimenting with the tortilla burger. Representing the Coates refugees were three girls, Decca, Little Brianna, the Breeze, and Taylor. Kane's a guy who needs to win. He needs to win before he poofs. Or he needs to win before I poof. The point is, he's not going to just accept us freeing all these kids from Coates and taking over Perdido Beach, Sam said. So we need to be ready. And we need to be ready for something else, too. Tomorrow is my birthday. He made a wry face. Not a birthday I'm exactly looking forward to. But anyway, we need to decide who takes over for me if... when I step outside. Several of the kids made sympathetic or encouraging noises about how Sam maybe wasn't going to blink out, or maybe it would be a good thing, an escape from the phase. But Sam hushed them all. Look, the good thing is, when I go, so does Kane. The bad thing is, that still leaves Drake and Diana and other bullies. Ork, well, we don't exactly know what's going on with him, but Howard's not with him. And Lana, we don't know what happened to her, whether she left or what. The loss of Lana was a serious blow. Every one of the Coates refugees adored her for the way she had healed their hands, and it was reassuring to think that she could heal anyone who was injured. Astrid said, I nominate Adelio to take over if, you know. Anyway, we need a number two, a vice president or vice mayor or whatever. Adelio did a double take, like Astrid must be talking about some other Adelio. Then he said, No way. Astrid's the smartest person here. I have Little Pete to look after. Mary has to care for the Prees and keep them out of harm's way. Dara has responsibility for treating anyone who gets hurt. Elwood has been so busy in the hospital with Dara, he hasn't dealt with Kane or Drake or any of the Coates faction. Adelio's been up against Ork and Drake, and he's always been brave and smart and able. She winked at Adelio, acknowledging his discomfort. Right, Sam said. So unless someone has an objection, that's the way it is. If I get hurt or I ditch, Adelio's in charge.
Respect to Adelio, Decca said, but he doesn't even have powers.
He has the power to earn trust and to come through when he has to, Astrid said. No one objected further. Okay then, Sam said. We have our people in position, and Adelio tells them when to go. Taylor, I know it's going to be boring for you, and a little scary, too. Pick out a friend to go with you. Trade off on sleep. But make sure one of you is awake the whole time. And keep practicing. Breeze, your role is critical. You're our communication system once it starts. Decca, as soon as we hear from Taylor, you and I move out.
Cool,
Decca said. We're going to win this, Sam said. They all got up to leave. Astrid stayed behind. Sam tapped Adelio's shoulder.
Listen, man, if you can find something useful for Quinn to do...
I'm on it. He's not a bad shot. I have him on top of the daycare with one of the machine pistols.
Sam nodded, patted Adelio on the back, and watched him leave.
Quinn with a machine gun, Sam said. I'm asking my friend to shoot people.
You're asking him to defend himself and defend the Prees, Astrid said.
Yeah, that changes everything, Sam said sarcastically.
What do you want me to do? Astrid asked. You haven't given me a job.
I want you to find a safe place and hide there till it's all over. That's what I want. But as of tomorrow afternoon, I need you up there. He pointed upward.
In heaven?
Astrid asked with a grin. Follow me. He led Astrid and her brother to the steeple. The lattice panels were still knocked out, just as Drake had left them. The lights of Perdido Beach looked eerily normal from up here. Many houses still had lights on. The sparse street lights were lit. The yellow McDonald's sign was brilliant. A breeze stirred, carrying the smell of French fries and pine needles, salt spray and seaweed. Two sleeping bags had been laid out in the snug enclosure. A pair of binoculars and a kid's walkie-talkie lay next to a paper grocery bag. I packed you some food and batteries for LP's game in that bag. I don't think the walkie-talkie works very well, but I have the other one. You can see almost everything from up here. It was a tight space. Little Pete immediately sat down in a dusty corner. Astrid and Sam stood awkwardly close together, crowded by the bell.
Did you leave me a gun?
He shook his head. No.
You're asking everyone else to do terrible things. You're just asking me to watch.
There's a difference.
Is there? What?
Well, I need you for your brains. I need you to observe.
That's lame,
she said. He nodded. Yeah, well, you haven't been trained to shoot. You'd probably end up shooting yourself in the foot.
Ah,
she said, not convinced.
Listen, I know this is crazy, but maybe you should think about Quinn's idea, you know, of getting LP to zap you to Hawaii, or whatever. He has the power. In case things don't work out, I don't want him to zap me away somewhere,
Astrid said.
I don't really think it would work, for one. And for two...
Yeah?
And for two, I don't want to leave you.
He laid his palm gently against her cheek, and she closed her eyes and leaned into him.
Astrid, I'm the one who's going to be leaving. You know that. No, I don't know that. I've prayed for it not to happen. I've asked Mary to intercede.
Mary Terrafino?
No, duh.
Astrid laughed.
You are such a heathen. Mary. The Virgin Mary.
Oh. Her.
I know you don't really believe in God much, but I do. I think he knows we're here. I think he hears our prayers.
You think this is all some master plan of God's? The phase and all?
No. I believe in free will. I think we make our own decisions and carry out our own actions. And our actions have consequences. The world is what we make it. But I think sometimes we can ask God to help us, and he will. Sometimes I think he looks down and says, "Wow, look what those idiots are up to now. I guess I better help them along a little."
"I'll gladly accept the help," Sam said.
"Just the same, I wish I had a gun."
Sam shook his head. "I hurt my stepfather. I hurt Drake. I may have killed Drake. I don't know. And I don't know what's going to happen next. But here's what I do know. When I hurt someone, it makes a mark on me. Like a scar or something. It's like..."
He searched for words, and she wrapped her arms tight around him. "It's like my knee, where Drake shot me. That's all healed up, thanks to Lana, like it never happened. But me burning Drake? That's inside me, in my head. And Lana didn't heal that." "If there's a fight, others will feel that hurt."
"You're not others."
"No?"
"No."
"Why?" because I love you.
Astrid was silent for so long, Sam thought he must have upset her. Yet she never loosened her hold on him, never pulled away, but kept her face buried in his neck. He felt her warm tears on his skin, and at last she said,
"I love you too."
He sighed with relief.
"Well, we got past that."
But she didn't join in the nervous laughter.
"I have something to tell you, Sam."
"A secret?"
"I wasn't sure of it, so I didn't say anything. It's hard to separate it from IQ. Intuition is usually just the name we give to heightened but normal perception that takes place below the level of conscious thought."
"Uh-huh," he said, using his dumb guy voice.
"For a long time, I wasn't sure it was anything other than normal intuition."
"The power," he said. "I was wondering if you knew. Diana said you were a two-bar. I kind of didn't want to, you know, force you to think about it."
"I suspected. But it's weird. I touch a person's hand, and I sometimes see what looks in my mind like a streak of fire across the sky."
He held her out at arm's length, the better to see her face. "A streak?" She shrugged.
"Weird, huh? I see it as bright or dim, long or short. I don't know what it means. I don't have any control over it, and I haven't really tried exploring it yet. But it feels like I'm seeing some measure of, I don't know, significance or something. It's like I'm seeing a person's soul, or maybe their fate, but in highly metaphorical terms."
"Highly metaphorical," he echoed. "Your power is the power of metaphor?" That at least earned him a smile and a shove.
"Smartass. The point is, I've known from the start that you were important in some way. You're a shooting star across the sky, trailing sparks."
"Do I shoot right into a brick wall tomorrow?"
"I don't know,"
she admitted.
"But I know you're the brightest shooting star in the sky."
Computer Jack woke and felt her soft hand over his mouth. It was dark outside, but the room was bathed in the blue glow of a computer screen. He could see the outline of her face, her dark hair. Her eyes glittered.
"Shh,"
she cautioned, and put a finger to her lips. His heart was already pounding. Something was wrong, no question.
"Get up, Jack. What's happening? You remember our deal? You remember your promise?"
He didn't want to say yes. He didn't want to. He had always known that whatever Diana wanted, it would be dangerous. And Jack was more terrified than ever. Drake was back. Drake was a monster. Diana stroked his cheek with her fingertips. He felt a shiver go up his spine. Then, just ever so softly, she slapped his cheek.
"I asked if you remembered your promise."
He was mute, too confused to be able to find his voice, too aware of her beside him, too terrified of what she might want. He nodded.
"Get dressed. Just your clothes. Nothing else."
"What time is it?"
he temporized.
"Time to do the right thing."
Her soft mouth twitched a wry smile.
"Even if it is for the wrong reason."
Jack climbed out of bed, very, very glad that he had found a pair of pajama bottoms to wear. He made her turn away and dressed quickly.
"Where are we going?"
"You're going for a drive."
"I only drove once, and I almost ran into a ditch."
"You're a very smart boy, Jack. You'll figure it out."
They crept from the room into the darkened hallway. down the stairs, careful, careful. Diana inched the outside door open and looked at the courtyard. Jack wondered if Diana had an excuse ready if someone stopped them. The sound of sneakers on the gravel of the driveway was amplified in the foggy night air. It was as if they were trying to make noise, like each step was delivered with a sledgehammer. Diana led him to an SUV parked haphazardly on the grass.
"The keys are in it. Get in. The driver's seat."
"Where are we going?"
"Drive to Perdido Beach. And it's not we. Just you."
Jack was alarmed.
"Me? Just me? No, no, no. If I go, Kane will think it was all my idea. He'll send Drake after me."
"Jack, either obey me or I'll stand here and scream. They'll come and I'll say I caught you trying to escape."
Jack felt his resistance crumble. It was all too plausible. She would do it, and Kane would believe her. And then, Drake. He shuddered.
"Why?"
Jack pleaded.
"Find Sam Temple. Tell him you escaped."
Jack gulped and bobbed his head.
"Better yet, find that girl Astrid."
Diana recovered some of her mocking attitude.
"Astrid the genius. She'll be desperate to save Sam."
"Okay. Okay."
He steeled himself.
"I better go."
Diana touched his arm.
"Tell them about Andrew."
Jack froze with his hand on the key.
"That's what you want me to do?"
"Jack, if Sam blinks out, Drake will turn on me, and Kane won't be able to stop him. Drake is stronger than before. I need Sam alive. I need someone for Drake to hate. I need balance. Tell Sam about the temptation. Warn him that he'll be tempted to surrender to the big jump, but maybe, maybe if he says no..."
She sighed. It was not a hopeful sound.
"Now, go."
She spun on her heel and marched back to the school. Jack followed her with his eyes till she reached the door. Now was her chance to escape, too. She could get away from Kane and Drake and all they represented. But she was staying. Was it possible that Diana really did love Kane? He drew a deep, steadying breath and turned the key. The engine roared. He'd given it too much gas, too much noise.
"Shh, shh,"
he said. He moved the gear to D for drive. He pushed the gas pedal down. Nothing happened. He almost panicked. Then he remembered. The emergency brake. He released the brake pull and tried the gas pedal again. The SUV crunched across the gravel at a creeping pace.
"Hey! Where are you going?"
Howard. What was he doing out here in the middle of the night? Of course. Still looking for his bully friend, Ork. Always looking out for Ork. Howard's expression went quickly from puzzled to questioning to alarmed.
"Hey, man, stop! Stop!"
Jack drove past him. In the rearview mirror, he saw Howard racing back into the school. He should drive faster. But driving was terrifying for Computer Jack. Too many decisions to make, too much attention demanded, too dangerous, too deadly. He came to a stop at the iron gate. It was closed. He jumped out and quickly swung the gate open. He stood still for a moment and listened. The sounds of the woods. Condensation dripping from leaves and tiny animals rustling and a faint breeze that barely pushed the leaves. Then, the sound of a car's engine. Back to the SUV. into gear, and a lurch forward through the gate. Leave it open and go. It's not like the gate would slow anyone down, but it had slowed him down. They were already after him. Panda would be driving, no doubt. He was the most experienced driver, much more experienced than Jack. Panda, with Drake beside him. Drake and that monstrous arm of his. Jack felt the fear rising within him. He squeezed the steering wheel. Too tight. The top of it broke off in his hands. He threw the 6-inch arc of plastic away and whinnied in fear. He forced himself to hold the wheel more carefully, control the panic, focus on the driving, focus on the road as it wound down the mountain, from dense woods to more open terrain and round the spur. Lights in the rearview mirror. Oh God, oh God. They would kill him. Drake would use that whip hand on him.
Think, Jack!
He screamed with sudden, shocking vehemence.
Think!
This was not a programming issue. It wasn't technological. It was more primitive. It was force and force, violence and violence, hate and fear. Or was it? Maybe it was just about clearance. The SUV sat high off the road. The car, now rapidly closing the distance, was low to the ground. Sport utility vehicle. Four-wheel drive. Jack peered at the roadside. A deep ditch all along the right side. A steep dirt and rock wall to his left. The car was coming up with such speed. No more than a few hundred feet back. There. A dirt road to the right. It might go nowhere. It might go 20 feet and stop. No choice. Jack yanked the wheel to his right, and even at low speed, he felt he might tip over. But the SUV righted itself and bounced onto the dirt road. Headlights illuminated a bright, featureless circle of dirt and scrub in the inky, moonless blackness. No way to see. No way to know. He was driving on faith, in the hope that the dirt road didn't suddenly end in a cliff. It was hard to hold on to the steering wheel as it bounced violently, but he couldn't grip it too hard, or the wheel would come apart in his powerful hands, and then he would really be finished. Behind him, the lights of the sedan were crazy, up and down, veering wildly. The dirt road was harder for the car. As bad as it was for the SUV, it was impossible for the car. Slowly, Jack pulled away from the car. Finally, the headlights dwindled away behind him, and it became clear that the car had stopped. Jack slowed his own pace, making it easier for him to control the SUV. He had left pursuit behind. But how would he get to Perdido Beach? The only way he knew was the main road. Would this dirt track lead somewhere? The one thing he knew for sure was that he could not ever turn back. 41. 3 hours, 15 minutes. The daylight hours passed quietly. Sam knew it would begin soon. And in just a few hours, it would end. Sam kept people on watch at the outskirts of town, but otherwise advised people to sleep, eat, try to relax. Kane would come in the night. Sam was sure of that. He had tried to take his own advice, but sleep had been impossible. He was changing clothes and thinking about the need to eat something, despite feeling sick to his stomach, when Taylor suddenly appeared in the firehouse. Sam was wearing boxers.
"They're coming," Taylor said without preamble.
"Hey, nice abs."
"Talk to me."
"6 cars coming down the highway from the direction of Coates. They'll be at Ralph's in about a minute. They're moving slowly."
Did you see any faces? Kane or Drake?
No.
Sam went into the bunk room, shook Adelio's bed, kicked Quinn's bed, and yelled, "Guys, get up!"
"What?"
Quinn said, sounding bleary and confused.
"I thought we were supposed to get some sleep."
"You got some. Taylor says they're on the move."
"I'm up."
Adelio rolled out of bed, fully dressed. He unslung the sinister-looking machine pistol from the bed railing. Sam slipped into his jeans and hunted for his shoes.
"What do you want me to do now?"
Taylor asked. "Bounce back and see if they go into Ralph's or split off into groups," Sam said.
"You might want to keep your clothes on,"
Taylor warned.
"I could be right back."
"When you bounce back, go to the plaza. I'm heading straight there," Sam said. Taylor vanished. "You ready?" Sam asked Adelio.
"No. You?"
Sam shook his head. "Let's make it work anyway." Quinn rolled out of his bunk.
"Is it time?"
"Yeah. Evening, like we figured," Sam said. "You know where you're going, right?"
"Straight to hell," Quinn muttered.
Sam and Adelio dropped down the fireman's pole and landed in the garage. The walkie-talkie in Sam's belt crackled, very loud. Astrid's voice, staticky and strained.
"Sam, I see them."
Sam keyed the volume down a little and pressed the button. "Taylor just told me," Sam said. "You and LP okay?"
"I'm fine. I see six cars. They're past Ralph's. I think they may be turning toward the school."
"Why that direction?"
"I don't know."
Sam bit his lip and considered. "Keep your head down, Astrid."
"Sam..."
she began.
"I know,"
he said.
"Me too."
He started walking fast, not running. Running would look like panic. To Adelio, he said,
"I figured they'd come in the same way they did the first time. It's the clearest path into the center of town."
"I thought they might take over Ralph's and make us come after them,"
Adelio said.
"I don't get it," Sam admitted.
They reached the plaza, and Adelio ran ahead to the town hall to check on his troops. Taylor appeared a dozen feet away, looking in the wrong direction. "Taylor, here."
"Oh, they're going toward the school, and Kane is definitely with them. Kane and Diana. I didn't see Drake. Maybe he's dead."
She said that last part with unmistakable relish. Then, just in case Sam had missed it, she added,
"I hope he's dead, that evil piece of..."
"Did they see you?"
"No. They can't touch me anyway. I'm too good at this now. I could bounce right into the school, see what they're up to."
Sam pointed a finger at her. "Don't get cocky. I don't want to lose you. Keep your distance. Go." Taylor winked and blinked out. Astrid on the walkie-talkie.
"They're getting out of their cars, going into the school."
Sam looked up at the steeple. She was right up there, so close he could yell up to her, but her gaze was drawn to the school, not down at him. Sam spotted Quinn running by with his machine gun over his shoulder. "Good luck, brah," Sam said. Quinn stopped dead.
"Thanks. Look, Sam, I..."
"No time for that now," Sam said firmly, but gently. Sam stood alone in the plaza, leg propped on the edge of the fountain. The school. Why? And why come in daylight? Why not wait till night fell? Albert came trotting out of the McDonald's. He handed Sam a bag.
"Some nuggets, man, in case you're hungry."
"Thanks, dude."
"We have faith in you, Sam."
Albert took off. Sam munched a nugget and tried to think. The move to the school was unexpected. Was it an opportunity? If Kane was out of the car, on foot, in a school building that Sam knew a lot better than he did,
He keyed the walkie-talkie. Is there any sign they're leaving the school?
No. They have one guy standing outside as a guard. I think it's Panda. I definitely did not see Drake.
He could end this, maybe. Right now, one-on-one with Kane. It would mean none of these kids would have to be involved. It would mean no one would have to pull a trigger. Dekka was running toward him.
Sam, sorry, I couldn't find you.
Maybe just the two of them, Sam and Dekka. It would double his chances. It would be right, one from Perdido Beach, one from Coates, side by side. Kane's at the school, Sam said. I'm thinking maybe we take it to them.
Is Drake there?
Dekka asked. No one has seen him. He may be not showing up.
Good,
Dekka said bluntly. We haven't had much time to get to know each other, Sam said. And now, well, I don't have much time, period. How much control do you have over your power? Dekka blew out some air and considered this question. She looked at her hands as if they would give her the answer.
I have to be pretty close. I can rattle a wall pretty good, or send someone flying, but only from a few feet away.
Yeah?
I'm up for it,
she said. Taylor popped in.
They're all inside the school. One guard as far as I can see, and definitely no Drake.
Okay, Sam said. Here's what we do. Dekka and I are going after them. Taylor, I need you to go tell Adelio. Then I need you to climb up the steeple, up where Astrid is. If Dekka and I get in trouble, we may need a distraction.
Dude, I don't climb. I pop, and I'm on it.
Taylor disappeared. I'll probably get used to her doing that someday, Sam muttered. He took a deep, shaky breath. It was his first big tactical decision of the coming battle. He hoped it wasn't a mistake. Jack had kept the SUV hidden in a patch of trees all through the day. He had slept fitfully, crunched in the driver's seat, all the doors locked, too scared to think about stretching out more comfortably in the back. Jack didn't care how big a hurry Diana was in for him to reach Sam. He wasn't going to die for her. Only when the sun set at last did he turn the key and creep from his shady hiding place. Down dirt roads with no signposts, lights off, moving at a crawl. Around blind corners, up, down, left, right. The SUV had a compass built into the rearview mirror, but the directions never seemed to make sense. One second it would read south, and the next minute east, even though he hadn't turned. It was impossible to know where he was going. He could drive with the lights on and see the road, but then others could see him as well. So he drove in the dark at little more than walking speed. Even at such low speed, the SUV bounced and lurched so badly that Jack felt like he'd been beaten up. That he absolutely had to get to Sam was clearer than ever. Kane would never forgive Jack for this betrayal. His only salvation lay with Sam. But only if Sam survived the poof. If Sam stepped outside, Kane would win. And then the phase would be too small a place for Jack to hide from Kane and Drake. Jack checked the dashboard clock. He knew the day and hour of Sam's poof. Just over 2 hours left. The moon rose, and the road straightened so that he motored along at a somewhat higher speed than before, anxious to reach safety. A rabbit darted in front of him. Jack jerked the wheel and missed the rabbit, but bounced off the road into a field. He yanked the wheel hard and swerved back onto the road just as a pickup truck shot by coming from the other direction. Jack cursed and turned in his seat to look back. brake lights flared, and the pickup screeched to a stop. Jack stepped on the gas. The SUV leapt forward, but now the truck was turning around and coming up fast. In the darkness, it was impossible to see who was driving the truck, but in Jack's mind it could be only one person, Drake. Weeping, Jack accelerated. The gas tank needle edged closer to empty, but still the pickup truck came on. The only escape would be to drive into the field where the truck might not be able to follow. Jack slowed just slightly and steered into the fallow field. The ground was plowed up, soft, and the SUV bounced madly across the rows. The truck kept pace. In the field ahead of him, powerful headlights snapped on. A tractor was moving with surprising speed to cut him off. Beyond the tractor, a dark, dilapidated farmhouse was set far back from the road. Jack was sick inside. They had him. Somehow, impossibly, they had him trapped. Jack never saw the dry creek bed. The SUV went airborne for a few feet. He felt weirdly weightless. And then the SUV hit the far bank of the creek and stopped hard. There was a loud bang, the airbag deploying, and a sickening crunch, and Jack found himself lying flat on his back in the dirt. Not hurt, but too stunned to move. The SUV's headlights illuminated the field where he lay. Two kids, a boy and a girl, were silhouetted by the glare. Neither of them was Drake Merwin. Jack dared to breathe. He didn't dare stand up.
"We saw you driving around out here with your lights off,"
the girl said accusingly. Jack wondered how she could have seen him on a pitch-black night. He didn't ask, but she provided the answer anyway.
"Even if you have your headlights off, your brake lights still come on. I guess you didn't think of that." "I'm not very experienced at driving,"
Jack said.
"Who are you?"
The boy, who looked to be Jack's age, asked.
"Me? I'm Jack. People call me Computer Jack."
The girl had a shotgun in her hands. She aimed the barrel at Jack's face.
"Don't shoot me,"
he begged.
"You're on our land, and we protect our land,"
the girl said.
"Why shouldn't we shoot you? I have to... If I don't... Listen, if I don't get to Perdido Beach, something awful is going to happen."
The girl had an odd combination of pigtails and a hard face, made even harder by the harsh white light from the SUV. She seemed unimpressed. She was maybe 11 or 12, and it occurred to Jack that there was so much resemblance that the boy had to be her brother. The boy said,
"He doesn't look dangerous."
To Jack, he said,
"How come they call you Computer Jack?"
"Because I know a lot about computers."
The boy thought a while and said,
"Can you fix a Wii?"
Jack nodded violently, digging dirt into his hair.
"I could try, but really, really, I have to get to Perdido Beach. It's really important."
"Well, my Wii is important to me. So if you fix my Wii, I won't let Emily shoot you. I guess not getting shot would be as important as you getting to Perdido Beach, huh?"
"Hi, Mary," Quinn said. She met him at the door of the daycare classroom. "I'm heading up top." Mary closed the door quickly behind her.
"I don't want the kids to see the guns," she said.
She herself was staring at the weapon.
"Mary, I don't want to see it my own self," Quinn said. "Are you scared?"
"Peelous."
"Me too,"